Blog Talk Radio.
We would have you understand that the flame that you are burns eternally and shall never go out, no matter how bright you allow yourself to become. We shall have you understand that you exist now and always shall, and you always have, because now is the only time and the only place and the only existence there is and always has been and ever shall be. You are eternal. You are infinite. You are spirit. You are body. You are mind. You are heart. You are soul. You are an idea. You are an expression. You are a thought. You are a dream of the infinite creation. But that is reality, and all reality is couched within your dream. You contain it all. You are the whole expression in your own individualized way. You are the matrix. The matrix is you. You are everything. Everything comes from you. Everything gives birth to you as you reinforce the existence of everything and everyone. All that is, the infinite creation, the fabric of existence, chose you. Chose that you should exist. Chose you. Consciously chose you. You are in that way, therefore, blessed, and we would have you understand that. Simply because of the fact that you exist, you are blessed. For you are created out of divine material, out of divine light. You are the infinite creator. And your existence was a conscious decision, a conscious thing, a conscious choice. Act in like manner. Be of like mind. Respect yourselves. Love yourselves unconditionally. For out of unconditional love were you created. And out of unconditional love shall you create anything you desire. Begin to feel the energy of your interlinking with all thought forms, all consciousness, all civilizations, all eyes, all ideas, all mind, all heart, all soul, all spirit is one. And you are one within that sea, within that pool. Know that you are the fabric and the essence of the galactic energy. Not one of you, in that sense, can be removed from the matrix without the collapse of the entire structure. You are integral in that way. You are essential in that way. And we would have you understand that because you are interconnected in this way, because everything you do has impact within the entirety of creation, that you deserve to exist in this way, and you deserve to be the fullest individual you can imagine yourself to be. That you deserve to manifest all the things you can conceive of. That you deserve the existence you have been given, or it would not have been granted to you. That you deserve all the love you can imagine, because love is what you are made out of. That you deserve all the light you can create in your life, because light is what you are made out of. Feel in the beating of your heart that it keeps pace with the rhythm and the pulse of the spinning of all the galaxies, of the fabric of existence itself, of the universal heart of infinite creation. For you all beat within that heart, and not a one of you is outside the heart of all that is. You are the blood and the life force of God itself. It is your force and your life as well. You are it, and it is you. Out of your dreams, be born. Out of your heart, be alive. Out of your soul, be light, for you are nothing else.
And welcome everyone to Revolutionary Life. This is Gary speaking. Tonight on the show Revolutionary Life, we're here. Now this show is here every weekday night, Monday through Friday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Check it out. And we speak on all this, any subject that we consider affects our day-to-day lives, something we need to get on top of, and things that may need changing. You see, revolution is nothing but change. It's all about change. It might be diametrically opposed to the current situation. As a matter of fact, it might be radical change, but it's just change. And a lot of things out here need to be changed. So with tonight, we're taking a revolutionary look at this concept that's out there now. One guy, Andrew Yang, was running for president, offered up a universal basic income. He wanted to send everybody a check every month. For life, I guess, I think. And so there was this big argument around what would happen if you did that. What if they send out this $1,400 they just put out there, the government just issued? What if that check came out every month to everyone? Everyone. Now, and whether you're working or not, whether that was COVID or not, everybody just got a government check, which is cash money. You ever heard the term good as a government check? If they say it's good as a government check, that means it's just like having cash money. So what if we all got a check every month? That $1,400, let's put it that, I mean, Andrew Yang, who ran for president, offered up $1,000 a month for everybody in the country, I guess. And everybody. I mean, he didn't make any distinctions, I don't think. In a small town, in Sacramento, California, somewhere around in that area near the Capitol, there's a young black mayor who's already implemented this concept in his town. He cut a check every month to the people in his city. But he has some qualifications on how you get it, who gets it and who don't get it. I mean, if you're living well, you probably don't get it. But if you fall under the poverty line, you're making less than $12,000 a year, something like that, then you get it every month, boom. Now, you can look that up to get all those specifics that he laid out, but he put it in. He's trying it in California, I think, small town in California. He's trying it. Dude is trying to put it in because he believes that it'll work. So far, so good. I want to speak to that issue today because I did a whole thing on the minimum wage the other day. You guys can go look that up if you want to get into that, those specifics about the kind of money you make for the work that you do. Specifically of interest to those of you who sell your labor, like I did most of my life, for money, my mental and physical labor. And that's the way I earned money, jobs, in other words. And so if you're one of them folks, that's an interesting talk we did over there on the minimum wage. It ain't your fault. I should have called it. I told them back then that the federal government around the Great Depression back in the 30s put in this concept called a minimum wage law. They passed a law that says if you're in the United States, the federal government will fine you or take you to jail or whatever. It's against the law to pay people less than this amount of money in this country for full-time labor. They made a law that says nobody can pay you less than this. And the reason for that is because that amount that the minimum wage was set at was calculated based on the average of living in this country, on a federal level, in this country. After reviewing the average, what it averagely takes to live a decent life in this nation, they established an average minimum wage across the board for all states. So it wasn't uncommon when I came up to go to work and have to punch in at a time clock when I came in to get my time going, my money going. I had to punch in and let the computer know I was there. And so when I punched in, above my time clock was a federal poster. And it stated the federal law dictates that you pay this much money, minimum wage. That was to the employer. It was over my time clock and it was posted on the wall, but that was the federal government reminding my employer that that was a law, that if they violated, they broke the law. And so employers had to post these. I think you had to post them because I think most places I work where they have a time clock is, or a workroom or something where the workers come in at, there was this poster up about the federal minimum wage. Anyway, so that law was just to say to a corp, not to me and you necessarily, but to those who hire me and you, that you can't pay these people in this country less than this, less than the cost it takes to live in this country, somewhere in this country. So it was an average minimum wage. Now, local states have adopted a minimum wage to tell corporations, not only do you have to pay more than the federal minimum wage, it costs so much to live here in California, let's say. They got their own state minimum wage. In other words, there's a law that corporations must abide by when they pay you for your labor. And that law says you can't pay these people here in this state less than this. This is the minimum. Why? Simple. It costs more to live here. So if you're going to hire people who live here, you're going to pay them the cost of staying alive, of living. And so, boom, I live in a state that never had a minimum wage law. They could care less what a corporation paid you. They could have paid you chump change. My state wouldn't have mined. We've never, my state and six other, mostly southern states, wonder why, never considered telling a corporate, introducing a law against paying people less than it costs to live. We had no minimum wage. If I got a minimum wage in my state, it was that federal one. Everybody had to do that. If it wasn't for that one, I wouldn't know what a minimum wage was. I couldn't even speak on this subject. So income, tonight is the question again. Your money, what you got to live on, what you trying to make it on, what you trying to feed yourself, your family, what you trying to get, that bag you trying to get, that grind you on, them bills you got, that debt you're in. We got to talk money. So today, and if you sell your labor for a living, your mental and physical power for a living, then it's about you. But every small business and every institution that depends on customers like you needs to be listening too. All this is connected. There's levels to this. Right now, we're going to start with the working folks. Folks who get up every morning and hit it and and do it for 30 years, 40 years, and can't retire. Do you know how many retired people looking for work? It used to be when I was a kid, retired. You could tell it's retired people because they had signs that they had that would say vanity license plate that would say gone fishing. Or yeah, you could tell that they were retired doing their thing. But now now you got people who are 65 years old working at McDonald's. It used to be a job for high school students, make some money in the summer or after school. Kids would put on a little McDonald's paper hat and paper apron and uniform or whatever it is, and you see these young kids at these windows most of the time. Now you're looking at grown-ups, people with babies to feed. Things have changed, huh? Well, the income hasn't. The minimum wage has never, since Ronald Reagan, that's the Reagan Revolution, the minimum wage was frozen. It was broken away from its connection to the cost of living by Ronald Reagan in 1980s, early, 79, 80s, yeah. And prices kept going up. The cost of living continued to rise, but it was no longer tied to your wages. So your minimum wage stayed the same, and you got poorer without anybody taking a dime out your pocket. You were sitting there with a pocket full of money and you got poor and didn't know it. Year after year, the cost of living continued to rise. Year after year, the minimum wage did not, as it had previously. The Reagan Revolution. So I can charge more for my goods and I don't have to pay my workers any more money for creating those goods, for packaging and shipping them and selling them. How about that? And you wonder why we got billionaires. You got poor. That's your money they got. Anyway, so we're talking about your income tonight. Tonight we're gonna deal with the universal basic income. And if you think that's something new, guys, if you think it's time to talk about universal basic income and that's just something Andrew Yang pulled out his hat, or the young black dude in California who's trying to do that in his little city. Was proposed by Thomas Paine, one of your founding fathers. We heard it in the 60s when Martin Luther King spoke of a basic income level for everyone. A floor that nobody fell through. You can fall, but there was somewhere you stopped. You didn't go to homelessness, hungry, and ragged. Anyway, so this concept has been around a while. So when we get back, we're going to toss it around a while. Let's see what you think. I'll be right back. And we're back. Welcome. If you're just joining us, or if you're still around, for joining us here at Revolutionary Life, where we look at every aspect, important aspects of our life from a revolutionary point of view. A big change, and that's all revolution is, a big change would be a universal basic income in this country. Now, just FYI, guys, this has already been implemented in Finland. Their results are in. So far, so good. And many of the reasons why we shouldn't do that, well, maybe it's because of the Finnish people, but most of those reasons prove invalid in Finland. Reasons like people wouldn't want to work. The income is basic. It'll keep you alive, baby, but it ain't living. So people never stop going to make money. They took the income, but they didn't stop going to trying to make more money. There's too many new nice things coming out. So people didn't all of a sudden decided, I'm going to stay home and try to make this little income I get every month stretch to feed myself and my family. No, people still want them cars and them houses. They're going to work. And Finland proves that so far. But that might just be the Finnish people. You might consider Americans different. I don't know. Sure they are. And then the other country, India, is also, and talk about somebody who needs something. India is also considering implementing a universal basic income for everyone. A floor. I call it a floor. It's just a floor to which you don't let your people fall through. If you're government, if you're governing a country, a people, you can't allow them to. You can govern a country and allow people to go homeless, hungry, and ragged every day. Some countries do. Take a walk around this one. Ask about the homeless question. Ask about war vets. Veterans, man. Gosh, I'm talking to veterans. Looking for a place to stay. Sticking them in dormitories and stuff. Oh, man. But these are people that don't put their lives on the line for this country, man. And they're having a rough time out there just getting some help. And anyway, I'm kind of close to that situation, so I know a lot about it. But there's many situations, not just the vets, where in this country there's poverty. And so a concept of a basic universal income is that there's no poverty. That poverty is addressed by making sure there's a floor through which people do not fall. You can climb as high as you want in this society. Sometimes things work out. Sometimes they don't. But when you fall, you stop somewhere. There's a floor that you fall back to. And that floor is not homelessness and hunger and desperation. That floor is a basic clothing and shelter, a life, living. What I say? Food, clothing, and shelter. Now here it is, 2021. And a caveman got up every morning and risked his life for food, clothing, and shelter. And it's 2021. And there's people out there doing that now. They don't have a club in their hand. They drive to work. But they hustling every day to do what? To provide food, clothing, and shelter? Everything walking, flying, or crawling that's alive on this earth, the day it's born, it secures basic survival needs. And I'm going to name three of them that everything living secures. Begins to secure the day they're born. Food, clothing, and shelter. The bee got a hive. Bird got a nest. We got homeless people. Grown-ups will laugh at a young kid who says, why come we're the most advanced living things on Earth? But there's animals on this planet who live generations after generations after generations, and they ain't never had a dollar in their pocket. We're the most advanced country on Earth, but if you ain't got money, you can go homeless, hungry, ragged. Now, we're intelligent, aren't we? But every living thing on this earth has secured those basic survival needs. That's their program day one. What's wrong with us? In 2021, we're working ourselves to death so that we can pay for food, clothing, and shelter like they had to do in primitive, prehistoric times. That's the main activity of their day. Of their life, hustling, on the grind, just for basics. That's living, that's surviving, that's not living. And some people ain't surviving. Because there's some people that don't even have basic survival needs. And I define those minimally as food, clothing, and shelter, something every living thing on this earth secures the day they're born. We're the most advanced creatures on earth, and if we ain't got a dollar, we can go homeless, hungry, and ragged and walk the streets and watch ourselves and our children be put out on the street. We can watch houses fall in on themselves. Why people are homeless. Housing is a commodity. People didn't build it to house you. They build it for the definition of a commodity is anything produced for the sole purpose of sale or trade. So if houses, shelters, a commodity, then that's why it was built. If they can't sell it, if they can't hit it, they'll let a house fall in on itself. They'll let it turn to a crack house before they'll put a homeless family in it. Happens all over my city. I can show you houses that have been standing abandoned forever. And then I can go down to Salvation Army on one of these charities and show you somebody with their family trying to get some food and a place to stay for the night. In America, food is not produced to feed people. Don't get it twisted. Food is a commodity. Once something becomes a commodity, it's produced for the sole purpose of sale or trade. If I cannot sell it, and if I cannot trade it, I'll throw it away. I'll turn a crop of tomatoes, strawberries, beans, greens. If I can't make any money off of them, I'll take a tractor and mow all that stuff down and grow a crop that'll make me more money. But people starving in America, but that's okay. I have to look after my income. I can't feed all of these cows on my ranch because the price of beef has gone down. So I'm going to dig a ditch, a trench. I'm going to shoot a quarter of my cattle, throw them in a ditch, pour lye on them, and bury them because the fewer I have, the higher price I can demand. You see, in capitalism, scarcity raises the price. So if you got too many cows, you're lowering the price of cattle. When the cattle gets scarce, the price has to go up. Ain't but a few around. Scarcity makes things dearer in a capitalist system. Abundance makes things cheaper. And so if I got too many cows, too many chickens, too many pigs. I don't care if people starving. I'll kill them, bury them, cut my herd in half. I can't feed all these cows with the price of cattle to what it is. So I'm going to shoot them, throw them in a ditch, put put lye on them and cover them up and cut my cost. That's okay in this country. You got to make money off your crop. If your crop ain't making money, mow it underground and grow something else. Oh, never mind that it's food. And never mind that there are hungry people in this country. That's an objectively separate thing from your business. Food is not created to feed people. It's a commodity. If I can't, by definition, something created for the sole purpose of sale or trade. If I can't sell it, and if I can't trade it for something, I'll throw it away. I'll turn the crop underground. Housing is a commodity. If I can't sell it or trade it, I'll let that house stand empty until it fall in on itself before I put a homeless person in it. That's okay. That's business in America. It's okay in America. Happens every day. So don't get it twisted. When you leave your people's well-being in the hands and in the hands of business, whose goal is not your people's well-being, their goal is making a profit, doing business, their stockholders, et cetera, et cetera. The public good is not in the founding documents of a corporate. Every corporation who sends in the corporate papers to become a corporation often has a sentence in it that explains their statement of purpose, their mission statement. And if it's a corporation, somewhere in that mission statement, it's going to speak to the fact that it's for the good and the continued good of its stockholders. It's, you know, that's one of its missions, to do the best it can for its stockholders. I mean, when you start a government agency, and it has a founding document, the Department of Health and Human Services, somewhere in there it's going to say, created, its mission is the public good. So you got two different founding documents, reasons for being, statements of purpose. One is stockholders, one is public good. But when you let private business run the public's business, they're going to run it according to their founding document and statement of purpose, not yours. And so, yeah, a house will fall in on itself before they put somebody in it. Crackheads will take it over before they put somebody in it. Because it can't make money. If it don't make money, it don't make sense in America. Universal basic income. A basic income is a floor. It says, here's a floor if you belong to this country. And you're a citizen of this country, you can fall. But you only fall so far. We don't let our people fall to the bottom. There's a floor we've created. And so that's an interesting thing. Because let me ask you a question. Let's get this straight. Is it the government job to make sure you, should the government respond? Be responsible for you having a place to stay and eat? Is that what the government was created to do? Feed you, house you, clothe you? Because you're a citizen of this government, so are those entitlements you are entitled to? I mean, shouldn't the government get about making sure you got a place to stay tonight? Or food to eat, or clothes on your back? Do you think that responsibility should be on the government? I'm just asking. Should everybody individually be responsible for procuring their own livelihood and not be dependent on the government to do it for them? I'm just asking. Because right now we're asking the government to do something about us, our poverty, our income. And so one government figure, Andrew Yang, proposed a universal basic income for everyone. And the government would issue out checks. But is it the government's job to make sure you got an income. Is it the government job to get you a job, to feed you, clothe you, and house you? Or is that your responsibility? I'm just asking. Well, here's what I know when it comes to who's responsible for your livelihood. This government, founding documents, one of them is Declaration of Independence. In the Declaration of Independence, the first couple of lines, you don't have to go very far, you don't have to read the whole thing, says that you are, as a citizen of this country, you are, and I guess all people, are endowed, all people, are endowed with certain inalienable rights, it says. Inalienable. They can't be separate, alien, they can't be alien to you. They can't be separated from you as something strange and different. They are your rights. They belong to you. And among those rights, in other words, there are many of those rights, but among them, the document says, this country's founding document, one of these countries' founding documents says, the Declaration of Independence, it says among those inalienable rights that humans are born with are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The first one of the three I just named was called life. And we can translate that into the things it takes to maintain life. And we could also mention what I just laid out was what every living thing on earth seeks out to stay alive. Basic survival needs, food, clothing, and shelter. So when it says that you have certain inalienable rights and one of them is life, does that just mean to keep somebody from killing you or something? I don't know. Or is it sustaining your life? How do you sustain life if you ain't covered these basic needs? Now, that sentence, that paragraph doesn't end there. It goes on to say that to guard these rights, to look after these rights, to look after these, to protect these rights, to guard these rights, governments are created among men. That's what it says. You have certain rights. One of them include life, and we define that as the things it takes to live, food, clothing, and shelter, at least. Basic survival, at least. Liberty in the pursuit of happiness, freedom in the pursuit of your goals. And then it says to guard these rights, governments are created among men. Now, within that statement, I just told you one of the responsibilities this Constitution says its government takes on, guarding those rights. You have certain inalienable rights. One of them includes life. And to guard those rights, governments are created among men, it says. So you just heard the reason for why governments are created among men. One of the reasons is to guard those inalienable rights. How your government doing? If people are homeless, hungry, and ragged, how your government doing with that first one, life? Is it guarding it okay for you? Because the Declaration of Independence has another, the further on down, it has a remedy for that. When the government, for whatever reason, does not produce, guard your rights, your inalienable rights, it has a solution in it. It says it is a duty, and it is the responsibility of the people to remove that government and place new guards in place to take care, to guard our inalienable rights. If they can't do it, the man says, the document says, get rid of them, and quote, new gods, replace them with new gods of those inalienable rights. And I was asking you how your government doing on them inalienable rights, because everything living and crawling got basic survival needs, food, clothing, and shelter. What are we doing with homeless, hungry, and ragged? What's going on? Why is those numbers growing out there? And so, yeah, we're talking about a big change. One of the other things that is scary about a basic, universal basic income to corporations, for sure, is that people won't come to work. We're going to talk about that. People are going to get lazy. They got a check coming, so they're going to get lazy. They're going to be so much money in that check from 1 month to the next. As a welfare recipient, is that check make it from 1 month to the next? As somebody who already get a check, government check, every month, relative to the cost it takes to live. We'll talk about that when we get back. Are people going to go to work? All right. We're getting close to our call-in section of the show. I noticed people are calling in. We have a call-in section. I'm going to announce that section in just a minute, and I'll give out the number and open up my chat room, et cetera, et cetera. That's coming up, guys. So y'all hang in there. We got to talk about whether people going to work. I mean, I can hear it now. I appreciate that basic income, baby. It takes care of my basics. But I want that new Tesla. So I'm going to work. I'll see y'all in a minute. You're listening to Revolutionary Life. We here every weekday night, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm sorry, Central Standard Time. And tonight, we've just been talking about income in general and this proposal for a basic universal income. And I was telling you, there's certain people who don't think this is a good idea. And one of the reasons they say is that people won't want to work. Now, this basic income, this basic universal income is not going to make you rich. It's not going to get you that new Tesla or them solar panels or that new zero-turn lawnmower, that Versace bag, I don't know, whatever it is. You got to go to work. You got to make some money. So nobody's going to, very few people who aspire to living their life to its fullest, they ain't staying at home waiting on no basic income check every month and trying to make it stretch out to the next one come next month. Come on now. That's too much. Salesmanship in the world. People got to shop, and they will. They just won't die on the street in the wintertime because they're sleeping in a cardboard box. Is that okay with you? It's called a basic income, guys. And corporations don't like it. Another reason they don't like it is because it gives you options. You ain't supposed to have options. You're supposed to owe. You ever seen that license plate that says, has a song on it, I owe, I owe, I owe, so off to work I go. I owe, I owe, I owe, so off to work I go. That's supposed to be your song every day. But what if you had options? I couldn't depend on you coming to work. Let me give you an example, guys. Let me give you a serious example. I would work during the summer when school was out, when high school was out. I was still living at home with my mama. But when school was out, I wanted to make my own money. We didn't have money. So I wanted to make my own money. I'd go looking for work. And I got a job in this warehouse. And where I was pulling orders and loading trucks on the docks of a warehouse. And one day, when it got really busy, certain times of the year it got really busy. And when it got really busy, you could work on Saturday and Sunday. They would open up Saturday and Sundays for you to come in and work, and you would get time and a half, your pay plus half your pay, if you came to work on Saturday. So if you were making $10 an hour, on Saturday you made $15 an hour if you came in on the weekend. If you came in on Sunday, you made twice as much. So if your salary was $10 an hour and you came in on a Sunday, you got double time, which means you got $20 every hour. Now, I'm a young dude, high school. I hate to give up my weekends, but that money looked good to me that weekend. And so I would run. I do a weekend shift sometime. I work through Friday and get up Saturday and go cut it again. Get up Sunday and go cut it again. I was dreaming about this place. I was there so much. But I like that little bag at the end, you know. For a teenager, I had a nice little lump of money at the end, right? And so one weekend, I was going to work on Saturday and Sunday and get that extra money. I walk in there, and there's a sign on the door of the manager's office, and that sign says, from now on, Saturday and Sundays are regular working days. And I'm quoting, he just said regular working days. I'm young. I didn't quite understand what that meant. So I went around and asked the other guys that I work with, what does that mean? And so one guy got smart with me and said, well, why don't you go in there and ask the manager? He'll tell you what it means. So I said, okay. Okay. So I knocked on the door and went in the room with the manager. And I said, I was just looking at the sign outside, sir. And it says Saturday and Sundays are regular working days. I said, What does that mean? I'm unsure what that meant. And so he said very sharply to me, well, it means what it says. Come in on Saturday, Sunday, you get paid just like you do every other day, he told me. No time and a half, no double time. If you make $10 an hour Monday through Friday, you make $10 an hour Saturday and Sunday. And I'm giving up my weekends. Now, I'm a young guy. I need to be out partying. I'm giving up my weekends to make this extra money, this double time money. And now you finna tell me that I ain't going to make no more coming in on Saturday and Sunday than I would if I came in Monday, Wednesday, Friday for my hours of work. I said, okay. I walked out the office and I walked back over to the guys and I said, y'all going to put up with this? You done worked all week. And now he wants you to come in on the weekends and you're going to get the same pay. And they look at me, you know, at him and his heart and all that kind of stuff. So I said, I'm out of here. I walked away from the job, guys. I walked away never to go back. And I talked about them guys like a dog who stayed there. I called them a bunch of slaves. And I apologize for that to this day. I'll tell you why. I had a basic universal income. I was living at home with my mom. I didn't have to worry about food, clothing, and shelter. Them guys had children, man. They couldn't afford to do what I just did, turn around and walk off that job, tell the man, there ain't no way in hell I'm working on my weekend for the same thing I'm getting paid down through the week. I ain't going for that. Well, I had options. I could talk to the man that way. I could stand my ground. I could speak my mind. And if I had to walk, I could walk. That's a hell of a lot of freedom. And I knew I wasn't going to go without food, clothing, and shit. Other shit, I was living at home with my mama. And I apologize to these guys who stayed there. Because when I think about it, they had bills. They had children. They needed that money. They couldn't afford to do what I did. They didn't have the kind of options I had. What happens when a workforce, a whole city, a whole town, a whole country, where working people, people who, especially I'm talking about people who sit like me, who sell their labor and mental, physical labor for money, to make money, to earn money. What happens when you have a basic, universal basic income and you're on a job that is exploiting your labor or doing something else that makes you want to leave that job, but you can't because that's how you pay your rent. That's how you buy food. That's how you keep your kids clothed and in school. That's how you pay your bills. But if you had a universal basic income, a floor for which you would not fall even if you fail, you'd have options. The government would be like going home to your mama almost. You wouldn't have to worry about a place to live, food to eat, and clothes on your back because you decided that you weren't going to put up with some corporation's efforts to use you. You have options. That's why they don't like that universal basic income. You have options. Like I did as a kid, I could go home to my mama's house. I knew I was going to have a roof over my head. I got clothes in the closet and my mom's in there cooking food. Ain't no way in the hell you're going to work me 7 days a week and take my weekends. I'm a teenager. I need to be out partying. You're going to take my weekends and still pay me the same thing? No way. But I understood them guys who stayed there on that job. A universal income, and maybe they would have left too. Just like I've been in the organizing situations where guys went out on strike. And the company said, well, I'll just wait them out. Because sooner or later, they're going to get hungry. Sooner or later, they're going to have some bills to pay that they can't pay. And they're going to start drifting back to work. So the company would just wait them out until they got tired of standing around out there picketing. And the bills started piling up. And they cut a deal or gave up or went back to work. They quit fighting. The company just waited them out. Because how you going to bite the hand that feeds you? But if you had a basic universal income, when we went out, if a labor strike went down, we had food closet, clothes closet, legal fund. We already had that stuff set up before we made the move so that you would have food to eat, clothes. Everybody got a bag of groceries and some money or whatever during the strike. Because when you bite the hand that feeds you, all they got to do is wait you out. But when you got options, they don't like that. And a basic universal income might be just the option you need to say, I'm not staying here. I'm not putting up with this. I can find a better job somewhere else. And in the meantime, I don't have to be homeless, hungry, and ragged, me and my children, while I look for that better job. It's just like universal health care. I've heard people say, I hate this job. They're exploiting us, using us, working us to death, paying us chump change. And I wish I could leave, but I need them health benefits. My child got asthma, and they're all under my health benefit. And so I need them health benefits. I can't afford to leave. But if you had universal health care, you wouldn't stay with a job that you couldn't stand to be at, that's using and abusing you, so you can keep your medical benefits. You got your medical benefits taken care of and walk. That's an option. They don't like you having options. What about that universal basic income? The government's job, according to its own constitution, is to guard your rights, your inalienable rights, and one of them is life. And if food, clothing, and shelter ain't basic survival needs to keep life going, what is? But we got homeless, hungry, and ragged. How your government doing guarding your rights? And the Declaration of Independence has a remedy for them. It's called appointing new guards to your rights. All right, we in that time. Guys, I'm going to open up my lines. I got callers calling in. And just FYI, I'm going to also open my chat room. So those people who would like to just write something in my chat, you're going to be free to write something in my chat. I'll get to you, no problem. And callers, just keep in mind, I don't have no secretary here, so you're coming on the air. Everybody's going to hear what you say, and everybody's going to hear my response. And if that's good with you, we're going to get the call-in section started in just a minute. Give me a break, and I'll be right back, and we're going to get to it. We're going to get at it. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. You're listening to Revolutionary Life. We're here every weekday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. All right? Also, that I have a Facebook page by the same name, Revolutionary Life. So if you want to keep up on these episodes, you just want a heads up on what they're going to be about or something, you can come on over to my page on Facebook. And where you can also catch up on older shows that I've done. And you can replay this one. All of my shows are archived, so you can always pull them up on demand. Folks, we moved into our call-in section, and we got callers waiting. And so we're going to move right into that. Hang on just a minute. I'm going to take my first caller, who's been on longest, I think. I'm going to bring in right now. Hang on just a second. Hello, caller. This is Gary.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing? My name is Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing tonight? Today?
Doing well, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay. Listening to the show? Been listening to the show?
Yes, sir. I was hoping to offer maybe a contrarian view. I don't necessarily support the idea of a universal basic income. And maybe I'll offer my view, and you can let me know what you think, and maybe we can come to some form of understanding.
Go ahead.
I think, so the way I would look at it is, and I say this as someone who's immigrated to this country, so I have an outsider's perspective when I talk about America as a whole, but just an observation of American people, I noticed that Americans, what I often see is a lack of an appreciation for what you actually have here. And because of that lack of an appreciation, which I believe is due to perspective, being the fact that most Americans have never left the country, know what it's like in the rest of the world, or maybe even know what it's like in history for most of mankind, because of that, they have this almost like they try to have this narrative of oppression or victimhood, and almost to make it seem like it's difficult to live in America. But the reality is America is the easiest country to live in, and it's the easiest country to make money in. And it's the easiest country for someone to be born in poverty and actually be able to come up financially in their lifetime and put themselves and their children in a good situation, which is why everyone from around the world risks life and limb to come here, because this is a land of milk and honey. This is the only country I've seen where you have people who are considered below the poverty limit and yet walk around at 300 to 400 pounds. Like, everywhere else in the world, when you're overweight, it's considered a status symbol. Like, it's a sign that you obviously have enough money to purchase enough food to put on the weight in the first place. But yet, right. Here in America, like, some of the most basic things that, like, around the world are considered luxuries, Americans completely take for granted. And my thing is, like, rather than having this mindset of how can I somehow become dependent on the government in some way, shape, or form, when you've got this much opportunity, your mindset should be one of how can I, like, come up? How are ways I can grow? Like, what do I need to learn so I have better understanding of finances? Or how can I become more disciplined in my personal life, whether it's bettering my health or bettering my finances or getting my, you know, my budget in order and things like that? When it's like, it just seems so weird that in a country with so much opportunity, it seems like Americans are content with, like, what can I do that can get me to, like, do the least amount of work and just give me enough just to get by? Like, I don't know what else you call that other than just laziness. You know, I mean, let me know what you think, if you disagree or you think I'm wrong somewhere, or what. Let me know if I'm off on some of my.
Well, hang on. Don't go nowhere. Why do you think that is? Because sometimes it's, you know, it's kind of like if you're living together, or you're living in a house, or you're there all the time, you're around the same people all the time, you can't take a good intern look at yourself. Sometimes people from the outside of you can see something you can't. So because you're coming from the outside, that's an important perspective. I mean, I can't see a hair hanging out of my nose, but you can, and say, hey, man, you got a hair hanging out your nose. So, I mean, that's a good thing. And so from your perspective, why do you think America is the way it is? Why do you think obviously it's not the government or the institutions. Since your primary critique is of the people of America, so what is it about the people, individuals in this country, that you think makes this difference between the people and other countries?
Right. So you know, that's why I brought up the point of it being a matter of perspective. So an analogy I could use to make it kind of make sense would be like, imagine if you had two kids growing up, and one kid grew up in a upper-class home where, you know, for lack of a better term, he grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth, and you have another kid down the street who's living in the gutter, and he's eating out of dumpsters. Now, that kid eating out of the dumpsters, looking at this kid living in the mansion, and the kid in the mansion is complaining that his filet mignon wasn't cooked properly. Meanwhile, that kid in the dumpster just happens to just get whatever little scraps he can get. And he looks at the kid in the mansion like, what are you really complaining about? Look how you got it, and then look at how the rest of us are living out here. And so the reason I say that is because most Americans, like Americans view what Americans call poverty compared to what the world calls poverty is two very different things. And so Americans have such a higher standard of living that for what would be considered like middle class or even upper middle class status in most of the world, in America, you consider that beneath you, like you would consider that like, oh, that's terrible.
Like hot and cold running water. Like hot and cold running water. Things we take for granted, like hot and cold running water. Like 24-hour electricity.
Yeah, 24-hour electricity. The fact that most Americans have multiple changes of clothing, multiple pair of shoes. Most Americans usually eat, if not two, sometimes three times a day, sometimes more than that.
There's an eating place on every...
Not a week. Like, in most of the world, it's like three times a week. In America, they expect... Now, not just the free Americans, people in prison. American prisoners get three meals a day. In most prisons around the world, they don't feed you anything. You eat what your family brings for you to eat. But even in America, The prisoners have a bed. They get a toilet. They get access to showers. They get access to new clothing. They get fed three times a day. They get access to medical care. I mean, even American prisoners live better than the vast majority of the planet, and definitely way better than almost every human being that came before us. If you know human history and you know what life was like for like 99% of human beings that have lived before us, you know how bad it was. So it's like you just have, once you take that into context, you're like, my God, what are you really complaining about? I mean, life itself is hard, period. There's no escaping that. Life itself, just to survive, requires effort. It requires some form of discipline. And I'm going to tell you this honestly, bro. I'm going to keep it real. A lot of people in America, they got an allergy. There's a real allergy in this country. They got, you know, they're allergic to these three things. And the three things I find Americans are allergic to is discipline, hard work, and personal sacrifice. Because the reality of life is, unless you're part of this tiny group of people that inherit some form of wealth, success is only gotten through those three things.
Let me ask you a question.
Very few people in life want to do that. And I'm just keeping it real. Because,
all the things,
yeah,
let me
ahead,
ask
sorry.
You a question.
Sorry about
that. All the things that you, all the good things that you said about this country, and it's the honey, milk and honey, you know, we got all this, we got all of that. How do you think we got all that? If we're lazy, we should still be in log cabins. But we're not in log cabins. We have big cities.
Exactly.
We have
the past generations were not this way. Like, so I've studied American history.
Okay, so we're narrowing it down now. So Americans
in
general.
Right now, I'm talking about 2021. I'm not talking about all of American history. Obviously,
so we're narrowing
American,
down.
Because
we got to be an advanced industrialized country some kind of way. We got to be the envy of the world some kind of way. Somebody had to pick up
work. You have the largest economy in the world. You have a $15 trillion a year volume economy. The fact that alone is incredible. But, like, for most Americans, they didn't even care
about
that.
Work out
they didn't acknowledge it like it's a fact. That's amazing. I'm just saying, like, think about this, brother. Like, what other country is it easier to be born poor? Let's say you're born dirt poor. Let's say you and your family are born almost on the street. Okay? Tell me another country, either now or even in the past, where it was easier for someone to be born in that state of life and be able to make it all the way up to the upper class within their lifetime.
Wow, I can't think of one right now. But let me get some of my other call. I got a line behind you, so let me get some callers in here. Maybe they can answer that question for you. I appreciate your call, though, man. That outside perspective, looking in, somebody who's not born and raised here in this culture, that's like somebody standing outside of you saying, "Hey, man, look at your hair." It's you know. So it's always good to get that kind of perspective. I appreciate your call, Mike. You take care, keep listening, and maybe somebody will answer that question that you just had. You take care, and I appreciate you. Okay, we got another caller coming up. Give me just a minute. Been waiting a while. Hello, caller. This
hey,
is Gary.
How are you?
You're on the
hey,
air, Gary. My man. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. This is Hotep, and it's amazing that the previous caller said the points he said, because I have the totally opposite arguments. I have lived in many nations also, right?
Mm. Okay.
What America has done is built a financial empire based on capitalism, and that capital is humans, whether it's sweatshops, slaves, or serfs. Now, a person like the previous caller would argue that was back in the past. Well, the U.S. Constitution was back in the past also created and amendments, but we live by it. The land of Native Indians that we have was back in the past, but now it's owned by America. His argument was fallacious because his total argument was about finance. Basically, he forgot about police brutality, gentrification, genocide. He forgot about treaties that were broken and treaties that weren't signed with certain groups. He forgot about the transatlantic slave trade. He forgot about the cutting down of timber and land and the pollution. He forgot about all the black folks in jail. Disproportionately, America locks up more folks than anywhere, right? He forgot about the gun violence by the police and that we sometimes have in our community because of financial poverty. His argument about being 300 pounds overweight or being 300 pounds, et cetera, is also fallacious because the food in our communities is not nutritious. So people that eat fast food that causes them to get overweight, and they end up with health consequences. He also didn't mention about fiat currency and M0 money and M1 money and M2. So he's giving a simplistic, pull yourself up by the bootstraps because America is good. He didn't mention Norway. He didn't mention that the EU is presently considering universal income. So his presentation is, yo, I came here, I work hard. What's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And that's the attitude of people that haven't experienced the real experiences of racism and capitalism, capitalizing on our planet. So I'm glad he said what he said, because as I heard him, I thought, wow, I got something that maybe will give another perspective. What will he say now when he knows I come from somewhere else and I have lived in other places and gone to school other places? So that strikes it right there. He also presented it as though it was mutually exclusive. Well, you know, if you don't work, well, you can get universal income and still work. You can get universal income and still be a good person. But he presented it in such a one-way argument, even though he was articulate and knows the slave tongue well, like some of us do. His mindset is more of a right-wing Republican. What's wrong with these Negroes? Put yourself up.
Those issues that he raised, I've heard before, and so they are common issues. And so, good, they need to be raised and addressed. They need to be raised so we can address them, because I don't know how many other people, especially foreigners, who may feel this way. Because you're right, it's a bit of naivete to tell me or people who came up in this country, who born and raised here and all that, never known any other country or any other economic system, about this economic system. You're sitting at the wrong table. I mean, I like to see what the view is from the outside, but I know me better than me and better than you. And so I appreciate that. But unless you were born and raised here and went down through there, then, you know, you don't carry as much weight, but it is important to get that view. And I'm glad you came back with yours, because yeah, you're right. There's an underlying context that has never been addressed, because I asked the question, how do you think we got that way? If we all lazy, how do you think we got that then? And he says, this current generation. So now we've narrowed American history down to this current generation being a bad generation. So that argument is kind of hard to hold on to when you come in here. I don't know what your name is, but when you come in and you say, this country, you know, if you had 300 years of slavery, you could build a great nation as well, probably. If you stole land from the native people, you'd have lots of land too. I mean, I live where the Trail of Tears is. We got posters up showing the Trail of Tears. You know how many people died for that land down in Mississippi? How many people had to walk and died going over to Oklahoma, crossing the Mississippi, because this country wanted that land? Native Americans died by the hundreds, marched across the Mississippi so that white folks could have plantations down in Mississippi. And so you can't just overlook all that. And I got you. I got another caller behind you. I got to get them in here. And hopefully before our time runs out. And so I sure appreciate you, my man. Appreciate your call, Hotep.
Thank you, brother. And he also ignored the World Bank, IMF, and all their corruption and the bailouts of the big corporations, but small folks can't get a bailout. Thanks, bro.
Yeah, we can't get a bailout. We can't get a bailout, but a corporation can get a bailout. I appreciate you, man. Take care. I got another caller coming up here. Here we go. All right, caller, you're on the air. This is Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Hello, dear. How are you?
Hello. I'm all right. Thank you for asking. It sounds like you're doing all right yourself. I love your show.
Great, great. We're having a good night.
And it sounds like you just started on air.
Yeah, I'm kind of new. Well, I used to do it a long time ago, so I got some old shows, but I'm just now getting back. Yes.
That's great. That's great. Well, I guess the topic is universal basic income. And
yes.
So I'm guessing that's why the caller previous to HOTEP had called, and because he just talked about the universal basic income and he stuck basically to the issue. And I think that's what the conversation was supposed to be about. I don't know.
Okay. I got you.
Okay. I liked some of the points that HOTEP did bring up. I think the reason why universal basic income would not work for the U.S. is because the income gap is too far, too wide to do that and have that as a basis for catching up. I think that the whole system, the people who are, you know, in the safety or part of the safety net that we have, which I was at one time myself, that program sucks because you apply for it. If you become unemployed or as far as you can't get unemployed benefits and you have, you know, yourself, your kids or whatever to feed, your rent, roof over your head and stuff. So they give you an amount of income, but it's barely enough to live off of.
Not adequate.
You know, and then if you get a job, then they deduct money from that. And so you ever get out. You can't get away.
But do you think that the universal basic income means that we could get rid of those programs now? We don't no longer need those welfare type programs. If everybody gets the basic income, can we just eliminate those programs as well and save money?
Well, yes and no. I would think that it would have to be one or the other because, again, if you get rid of the welfare programs, I like to call them safety nets because that's what they were intended to be before we got screwed.
Right.
But anyway.
You're right. You're right on that.
If we get the universal basic income, we need to get rid of the programs. But the problem with that is that the people who not necessarily don't need it, but they're comfortable already, so it's just a little extra for them in their accounts, and you still have people who are still trying to catch up. If you keep the programs and you can't have universal basic income, but I think they need to fix the damn programs, reform them so that people can still get their help assistance while moving ahead in their jobs without fearing that they're going to lose money. Because even just the slightest $50, you know, 2 hour more that you work, they're going to deduct from you. And it just, you know, how are you supposed to get ahead? How is that a safety net? The safety net is there so that you can bounce back. That means you're going to help me out until my boss gives me more hours or until I get a good job so that I don't need that anymore, so that I can be on my own two feet.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good point. A foundation. And if it's a foundation for you to work from, I just need a platform to work from. If I'm busy trying to feed, house, and clothe myself, and I've told you how primitive that is. I consider that criminal in 2021 that we're still doing what prehistoric people did, fighting for food, clothing, and shelter every day. But you had a floor that you would not fall below, you would have the time to go look for work. You'd have the time to do all these things and not worry about whether you're going to be able to feed your kids before the month is out. And so, so I'm thinking that a universal basic income is something, a floor. That's all I'm thinking. That should be a floor. If the government is responsible for guarding our right to life, there should be minimally a floor through which its citizens do not fall. And that's homelessness.
Yeah.
That's desperation. Desperation creates an environment for desperate people to grow out of.
Yeah.
Desperate people will commit desperate acts.
It keeps them there. It keeps them there. They fall and they never come out.
Because like you said, if you're getting money from anywhere, if they find out you're getting some kind of money from anywhere, I used to do a free food distribution, and they would harass the welfare recipients for coming get that bag of free food.
Because
they were getting, you're already getting food stamps from the government. What you doing in this line? We didn't care. If you needed the food, that food didn't last a whole month. If you needed
right.
that food, you
yeah,
come to us
there,
and get
they didn't
it.
Need it.
But they
yeah.
wanted to count it as some kind of income. Ain't that something? So you never get
yeah.
out of
see,
it.
That, if they could do it for a year, maybe even a year and a half, you know, calculate the money that they need for rent, for food, and the person or family, mom, dad, whoever, they've got a year to work with. We're going to give you that money for a year so you don't have to worry about, you know, feeding the kids, having a roof over your head, kids, you know, need school supplies and whatever.
Clothes. Yeah.
And you just, you work that job and you work it, you keep working it, you get, you know, more hours or ahead or whatever it takes.
Usually you got to get
Yeah.
You got to get past
whatever
it. You got to, most jobs, you got to get past that first week. And sometimes 30 days, mm-hmm. I don't know, most jobs you don't get that first paycheck the first time once you, you know, when you first get there. And they hold one check back, as it used to be anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you need them. And then transportation back and forth, that it costs money to go to work.
Yes, yep. So that's why I say a year and a half. And that first paycheck that they're going to get, they're going to have to report it on their next month's reporting to the services, social services. So now that money is going to be deducted from the following month when they needed
ah,
that. You know, it's sick. It's sick.
It's a vicious cycle, isn't it? And
it
so,
is.
Yeah.
If I didn't have my family, I'd still be there. So thank God for my family. But yeah, so I think the system needs to be reformed because the people that don't need it shouldn't have it. And the people that do need it need a safety net that's going to protect them for at least a year and a half to get on their feet, put some money in the bank. And so that way they can be comfortable.
Well, I appreciate your call because you put your finger on the area that I think our government has to work on the most. I said in my last presentation, and I'll move on to the next caller because I got one more caller been standing for a while.
Thank you.
The military has a saying that an army moves as fast as its slowest soldier. And if we're going to progress as a nation, we got to go back and get our slowest soldier, put them on a gurney, have two people get to their side. But we need to go back and get our people. We can't allow poverty. End of story. It's holding us back. It's dragging us down. And so we need to go eliminate it. How do we need to go get rid of poverty as a way of moving forward. That's all I'm saying. Now, we ain't going nowhere.
I agree. It's true. Thank you.
I appreciate you, sweetheart. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Let's move on. All right. I got one more caller that has been standing here for a minute. I'm going to go down and bring them in. And we still got a little time. I had some good calls tonight. Hello, caller. You're on the air. This is Gary. Who am I speaking with? Hello?
Sorry, it's Hotep. I was just listening. I didn't press one.
Oh.
But since you put me on, the rich guys get their parents to bail them out. Donald Trump got his start from his father's money. Poor kid going to do. Where's their money going to come from? Magic?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe that people don't get that people need help. The rich don't pay taxes. They got tax lawyers, so they don't pay. Who pays taxes often are the poor. The small businesses are the ones that hire the majority of Americans, not the big businesses that get the bailouts. Everywhere you look at it, you see that the system is marginalizing, oppressing, repressing, and suppressing people based on fiat currency that is created out of toilet tissue. Our fiat currency has no gold backing. It's clicks
mama,
in a computer.
My mama told me that a loaf of bread cost a quarter. So I asked her, I said, when she was a kid, and I said, Mom, what's the difference between a loaf of bread today and one then? She says, nothing. So I realized that it wasn't the bread that increased in value. The dollar is worthless. That's ridiculous.
True, because of the magic called inflation. Inflation is basically stealing from workers and the poor and taking more. And that gap that's created, that's inflation. But economic schools, universities, many of us have been to, have taught us the opposite. Oh, inflation is much. No, it's simple. If I take from you on your radio show and I stack up money and you make less, that gap is the inflation. And then they create all kinds of cute formulas and have all these talking heads that talk stuff when all the focus is on the financial sector. Look at the news. Financial sector. What is it about the poor? Did they do any crime? Lock them up. Are they kicking down the doors on Wall Street? No. Our system is very upside down, and people don't understand it and call in those statements.
Well,
and it's very frustrating.
The motivation and the mechanism that results from that motivation is not from the Constitution, because you're not guarding my right to my inalienable right to life. You are ensuring that you're trying, maybe your method for ensuring the people's inalienable rights are guarded is by having corporations provide them with jobs, and that's your way of solving problems. But obviously that hasn't solved the problem. In fact,
true.
You mentioned prisons. Well, when you have private prisons, when there's an economic incentive for locking people up, it's no wonder we have the largest prison system on earth. Who has more people incarcerated than we do per capita? And so it pays. It makes sense. All of a sudden, it's a business. And when you let business, who have a different reason for being, I can't blame business, because they say this is why we exist. And if you put us in charge of social services, we're going to run them for profit. And we can't, we're going to not run it. And so some prisons in some of these local towns will only build a prison in your town if you guarantee them a certain capacity of prisoners, or they can't make money. How you meet that quota every month in your city?
True.
You find you some prisoners. You create some prisoners. You change misdemeanors into felonies. You introduce maximum minimums. You introduce three strikes, you're out. You know, how do you keep them prisons full? Because there's money to be made. So the incentive changes when you depend on business to solve social problems. And so we end up where we are. We end up with Mayor Cuomo ordering PPE for New York. And when it doesn't come, he calls and finds out that California offered more money for it, so the corporation sent them to California instead of to New York.
Mm.
In the middle of a national epidemic, when we all should be working together, corporations don't make that money. When you put them in a situation in between the government and the people, they're going to squeeze every dime out of the people they can, even in a pandemic.
Bro, the first corporation was the VOC in Europe. They had slaves. They were stealing from the East Indies. The first corporation. So when you look at the history of what we're saying about corporations, et cetera, you look at the history of America, U.S. Constitution. Look at the history of corporations, the VOC. And, I mean, history is the greatest teacher, and we don't learn from history. So we repeat the same cycles, and the super rich continue to use racism, sexism,
well,
and other forms to divide us.
Then we got De Beers. We got the Anglo-American gold companies. We got the Royal Dutch Shell, been around a long time. We got AMP, American Pacific Tea Companies. All these companies help institute themselves colonialism in these countries. So yeah, companies have been around running things. Globalism, everything has been initiated by corporate finance. National and international. Thank you for calling. Yeah.
Thank you, bro. And their propaganda is, we're going to take over that nation because those people are savages. They're ugly. They're stupid. They're mean. We deserve to be over them, take their land, their fish, their oil, their women, their children. And that mindset exists today.
No, Great Britain sold the invasion of Africa to its people, and so did Belgium, on the grounds that they were going to introduce the three C's. We're going to take those people, commerce, Christianity, and civilization. And the people say, yay, go for it. Commerce, Christianity, and civilization. We're taking the three C's down there. Who can argue with that?
I know who can argue with the Catholic Church saying papal bulls. These people are savages. Let's go and conquer them. By the way, it's not all white people. But unfortunately,
no.
They have allowed their system to abuse them and marginalize the brown, black people of the planet. And we must end that. It's ridiculous.
India barely ever had a middle class. raped so bad by Great Britain. All right, my man. Appreciate you calling in. I'll be here. I won't be back until Monday. I'm off on the weekends. Well, I'm not really off. I teach classes on the weekends, Spanish and computers. And I'll be back here Monday evening at 7 p.m. Take care of yourself. What? All right, Hotep.
Viva la revolucion. Adios.
All right, gracias. Adios, amigo. Mucho gusto. All right. You're listening to Revolutionary Life tonight. We've had some very interesting callers call in tonight. We've even had our chat room blowing up. And I'm glad everybody's into these conversations because I'm hearing sides, both sides, and I like that because more than you may have that point of view, pro or con. And so just because one person brings that point of view today, there could be a lot of other people who think that way or have these questions. And so to have them dressed and dealt with, even between one and two people, might be getting it addressed and dealt with between a whole lot of folks who hold these opinions, differing opinions about this approach. You've been listening to Revolutionary Life, where we look at every aspect of life from a revolutionary point of view. There's a lot of things in life that affect us. And one of them is finance, income. And if you sell your labor for a living, mental and physical, if you're trying to run a small business in a community that can barely, where people can barely feed themselves, you're going to have a hard time. Tonight, we introduce this concept of a universal basic income, where everybody has some money, basic money, enough money to meet some basic needs. You know, I always say, if you allow for desperate situations, you've created an environment for desperate people to come out of, to grow from. And desperate people create desperate acts, baby. Our society won't move forward until we address poverty. How do we bring people out of poverty? Well, poverty is nothing but a lack of money, isn't that? That's what poverty is. Economically, there is something called a poverty level. If you go to the government agency for aid, they're going to see if you earned over the poverty level. And whatever the poverty level, that's a thing called the poverty level, guys. And so, yeah. And so we got to get rid of poverty. I told you. In the military, we learn that an army moves as fast as its slowest soldier. We got to go back and get our slow ones. We got to bring up the rear, fellas, folks. And that means addressing poverty and desperation in our nation. I want to thank everybody who listened in tonight. I won't be here on the weekends, guys. I'll be teaching. I will be back here Monday evening at 7 p.m. And then every weekday next week, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. I want to thank everybody for writing in, listening in, participating tonight. And you can trip over to my Facebook page by the same name, Revolutionary Life. And you get a heads up over there on what the next show is going to be about. You also can get access to previous shows. All my shows are on demand. They're all archived. They're all recorded. And so if you missed this one, or if you want to hear it again, see what you sound like on the radio, whatever, you can pull this one back up in about an hour or so. It'll be in the archive as well. Again, thank you for listening. This is Gary. You've been listening to Revolutionary Life. Thank you.
Thank you.